take this to the arranging group. We're going to have this out if necessary. And I'll get 10 signatures and we'll call a special meeting of the ecclesia if necessary so that I can get this matter through. And they light the fuse and they throw it into the ecclesia and boom, up she goes. And before you know it, the whole ecclesia's in an uproar. Because you see, these sorts of people, they couldn't care less about the controversy they create. They're quite happy to plunge others into the trouble without regard for the consequences. Now, here's the principle of the verse. And I think it's a very important principle. The scornful ignite. Wise rulers defuse. They learn to do that, you see. There are always those who, not content to raise their feelings in a quiet spirit of brotherly love, they want to involve as many people as possible in the controversies they create. And those involved in wise administration inevitably are found moving around the ecclesia, putting the fires out. Because what's been going on, what's been happening, is not in the best interest of the truth, doesn't honour Yahweh at all. So wise people learn to diffuse these sorts of fiery conflagrations in ecclesial life. Now, you see, I don't want you to get me wrong here. I'm not suggesting that the wise ignore the problem. If there's a problem, then it needs to be dealt with. This is not suggesting that wise rulers ignore the problem. What it is saying is that the way the problem is handled will determine its outcome. And if one really wants to handle issues in a way so that the truth is advanced, then we will learn to find the right approach in order that we might seek the right outcome. Verse 9, of course, says that, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter what you do, you're not going to get anywhere anyway. Because verse 9 says, you see, if a wise man contend with a foolish man, whether he rage or laugh, there is no rest. Now, you see, this time, the word contend here is the word shafat, the normal Hebrew word for judge. So now we've got a sort of judicial contest between the wise man and the foolish man here. Now what we're being told in this verse is that the fool he'll neither listen to reason, nor will he yield to argument. He will either rage with fury, or he will laugh you to scorn. But you see, what the verse is saying is that either way, it's impossible to reason with him, it's impossible to resolve the dispute calmly, and it's impossible to reach agreement. There are people like this in ecclesial life, aren't there? It doesn't matter what you do, you've lost before you begin. They'll either foam at the mouth in rage, or they'll laugh their head off. But either way, says the proverb, the one thing you never get is any rest. There's no rest in the matter, no conclusion, no peace, no shalom. So what do you think the lesson of verse 9 is? It's interesting, actually, because you see the proverb is sort of almost left unanswered. It's almost left open, isn't it? It doesn't say what you should do. And I think you see that the lesson is that the circumstances in the end will decide, therefore, what you shall do. And I think there's only two things you can do with these sorts of people. There's only two things you can do. I think the one decision on some occasions is you've got to look at how important the matter is. Is this crucial to the truth? And to the interests of the truth. All right, well, if it's not, then walk away. Because you're never going to win. So leave it be. It's a matter of, it's not a fundamental thing. Then leave it be. Do not enter into controversy with those whom you know you can never help and never accomplish agreement with. You can never reach resolution with some people. Walk away, leave it be. Wise rulers learn that sometimes there are some problems that you just cannot solve. And I think the other thing is, depending on how important the issue is that there are times in ecclesial life, and I've seen this happen, where there's been a problem in the meeting and someone's been all wound up to 99 about this particular subject, and they come in and they proclaim their views to the arranging brethren, and they go on and on and on about it, and in the end there comes a time when you've got to say, well, look, brother, we've heard what you've said. We thank you for your thoughts. We have heard them. But we've decided that we're going to do this anyway, or that anyway, and we've given it long consideration. We believe that this is in the best interests of the truth, and we've made the decision to do that. And here endeth the matter. It's over. It's closed. I'm sorry. And sometimes arranging brethren need to do that in ecclesial life, so that controversy doesn't run along endlessly, because these people will always do that if they can. Now, the proverb doesn't say which line to take. I think the circumstances will tell us at the time. Remember this, that this is the key. Every circumstance, every problem, the first thing we should say is, what will best advance the cause of the truth here? I'll take that line. We'll take that approach. Now, verse 10 says that wise administrators, wise rulers have to learn that in the discharge of their responsibilities, they'll have those that do come into hostility with them, opposition with them. In fact, verse 10 says, the bloodthirsty hate the upright, but the just seek his soul. You see, this is a state of enmity between the thinking of the spirit and the thinking of the flesh that began all the way back in Genesis chapter 3, wasn't it? That bloodthirsty state of hostility between the two seeds. This is Cain and Abel. Remember that passage in the first of John? That Cain slew Abel, and wherefore slew he him, says the apostle, because his own works were evil, and his brothers were righteous. And you see, there's been something from time immemorial, in fact from the days of the Garden of Eden, from the time of those two boys, where there's something about personal purity and personal integrity in a person's life that excites the enmity of the flesh. It's always been so. By the way, deep down I think they respect you, they respect that principle, but they sort of manifest a hostility to it. The flesh doesn't like the purity of the truth. John, everyone that doeth evil hateth the light. Now by the way, you see the second part of the verse where it says, but the just seek his soul. That the word seek there is really a Hebrew word that's invariably used in a hostile sense. It doesn't mean that they seek his soul to uphold it. It means they seek his soul to take it away. Remember the cry of Elijah? I have been very jealous for the Lord God of Israel. And I only am left. And they seek my life to take it. So when it says that they seek his soul, they don't seek his soul to preserve it, they seek to take it. The Revised Version says, as for the upright, they seek his life. The NIV says they seek to kill the upright. So the spirit of the verse, I think, is this, that those who are endeavouring to maintain principles of wise administration, being blameless in their lives, will from time to time find that they are singled out for unreasonable criticism and for unwarranted hostility. And the exhortation of this verse is a plea that we ought to remain upright to those divine principles, irrespective of whatever hostility may come our way. That's part of the responsibilities of wise administration, not to deviate from the path of truth. Even when at times there are those that seek our soul, that's the manifestation of the flesh, isn't it? And we're trying to manifest instead here divine principles. And here's another divine principle, because you see what verse 11 says, a fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it until afterwards. I've always felt, you know, that in the Authorized Version, this particular verse is perhaps just a tad misleading. It sort of implies, doesn't it, that a fool sort of has all his anger and fury and rage and he blurts it all out at the start, but a wise man keeps it all in until... And then afterwards it comes bursting forth later on in the wise man. Now that's not what the proverb means at all, is it, really? What it's saying, first of all, is that a fool gives... You see, fools lack self-control, don't they? You know, there's another marvellous proverb that you might take as a cross-reference, which is chapter 15, verse 2, that says, the tongue of the wise useth knowledge aright, but the mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. The mouth of fools poureth out foolishness. You see, they can't control themselves. They blurt it all out, their anger, their wrath, their feelings, their rage. Jerusalem Bible says, the fool comes out with all his angry feelings. So if that's what the fool does, then that's clearly not what the wise man does. So what does the wise man do when in verse 11 it says that he keeps it in till afterwards? Well, the Jerusalem Bible says, the wise man subdues and restrains them. Greens says, but the wise holding back quiets it. So you see, the proverb does not teach that the wise man holds back his feelings only to lash out later on. What it teaches is that in holding back his feelings, he brings them under control and pacifies them. This is not anger merely checked for the moment, but in fact overcome. That's what wise rulers learn to do. They overcome their anger. In Psalm 89 and verse 9 it says that when the waves of the sea arise, thou stillest them. And the word stillest in Psalm 89 and verse 9 is the same Hebrew word used here, that he keeps it in. He settles his feeling. You know, aren't there times in ecclesial life and family life where, you know, something happens and, ooh, you can just feel those feelings rising up, can't you? You ever had that situation in life? In most situations, I regard myself as a thoroughly reasonable man. Actually, there's only one thing, though, that I get... Well, no, that's not true. I was going to say, there's one thing that actually really upsets me in life more than anything else. You know what it is? It's a funny thing. I think it's something to do with my childhood experiences or something, I'm not sure, but there's one thing that really makes me mad, in a controlled sense, of course, and that's injustice. I hate injustice. I hate seeing something that is just absolutely unjust and unfair, when you know it is. That's a particular problem I've got. You see, there are times when I can really feel the feelings coming up, and this proverb says, well, wise administrators learn not to blurt it all out, do they? They keep it in check and they actually overcome it. You see, the lesson of the verse is that those that rule are often subject to extreme provocation of spirit, but they must learn to master their emotions. Rulers must first learn to rule themselves. What a great truth that is. True for all of us. You know what they say, if you're angry, count to 10. If you're very angry, count to 100. Because otherwise, you're responding according to the thinking of the flesh, aren't you? Verse 12, if a ruler hearken to lies, all his servants are wicked. You see, in biblical times, rulers were open to the counsel of their ministers, but they were also open to the needs of their people. Remember the days of Moses where the people would come to Moses and make their requests known to him? Remember that? And there'd be this endless circle of people coming to the tent of Moses that he might hear their requests and give counsel. Imagine the demands of a king. Imagine the demands on a king as the people of the realm come to make their petitions to the king. Now you see, in the course of all that, a ruler hears many things, doesn't he? A ruler hears many tales, and some of the tales that he hears are lies. But that's not what this proverb says. The proverb doesn't say that a ruler oughtn't to hear lies. He will. The proverb cautions against hearkening to lies. That's quite a different thing, isn't it? You see, this is about the ruler who's too ready to listen to lies, too ready to take up the fact that they are truth when they're not, too ready to listen to those things that are evil. A love of gossip and scandal. Now you see, the ruler who's too ready to do that will breed envy and prejudice and scandal in his own court. And worse still, the upright will leave him. One by one, the upright will quietly slip away from the ruler. From his entourage, from the royal household, they will slip away because the ruler is hearkening to lies. And you see, the real tragedy is not just that the ruler does it, but you see what happens. You see, it says all his servants are wicked. You see the word servants here? It's not the normal word for servants. It's not the normal household slave here. It's a special word, sharath, which is actually normally translated ministers. And so the Revised Standard Version, for example, says, all his officials become wicked. Jerusalem Bible says, well, I quite like this, Jerusalem Bible says, all his ministers become scoundrels. Now you see, these are the men who administer the king's laws. And what this proverb says is that if the king listens to lies, they will follow suit. And in the end, the whole kingdom will be affected. So the exhortation is to realize how much, again, a personal stand for truth has an influence on others. Rulers have a greater responsibility in setting examples in this regard, that they do not listen to scandal, they want to hear truth. They do not allow lies to multiply, either in the family or in the ecclesial house. Verse 13 says, the poor and the deceitful meet together, the Lord lighteneth both their eyes. Now, here's an interesting set of proverbs for you. We're pretty well short of time because we've just run out of time now, but I'm just going to chase you through two or three quick references. Firstly, chapter 22 and verse 2. Just three references here. Proverbs 22 verse 2 says, the rich and poor meet together, Yahweh is the maker of them all. So what Proverbs 22 and verse 2 tells us is that we all have a common origin. God is the maker of us all. Rich and poor met together in the origination of the creative power from God. Now come and have a look at Job chapter 3 and verse 19. Now you see, whilst Proverbs 22 verse 2 speaks of a common origin, Job chapter 3 and verse 19 says, well, now, what's he talking about? He's talking about the grave, actually. Verse 18, there the prisoners rest together. They hear not the voice of the oppressor. And then verse 19 says, the small and great are there, and the servant is free from his master. So you see, all meet together, not only in a common origin, says Proverbs 22 verse 2, but all have a common destiny. Don't they? Rich and poor meet together in the grave. We all have a common destiny, you see. In Matthew chapter 5 and verse 45, another verse. And then we'll come back to our proverb. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 45 says, that ye may be the children of your Father which is in heaven, for he maketh his sun to rise on the evil and on the good, and sendeth rain on the just and on the unjust. So you see, Matthew 5 and verse 45 tells us that we also have a common reception of God-given blessings during our life, don't we? We all get the sun and the rain, the benefits of the Father, in common. Evil and good, just and unjust. Now, let's come back to our proverb then, Proverbs 29 and verse 13, and you see what the proverb says. It says, that the poor and the deceitful meet together, the Lord lighteneth both their eyes. So here now, what we're being told in this particular proverb is that we also have a common status before the Father with regard to learning or receiving the truth. God lightens both their eyes. Irrespective of from what end of the pole of life they've come from, the Lord lighteneth both their eyes. Both the poor and the deceitful man may be the subject of divine enlightenment by his sovereign will. So here then is a lesson for wise rulers. And the lesson is this, that the wise ruler does not discriminate in the exercise of divine principles between persons. Shall I say that again? The wise ruler does not discriminate in his exercise of divine principles. We don't put difference between brethren. We treat all alike. The Lord does. So if God doesn't discriminate between people, why should we? We are the same towards all. We do not discriminate in any way with regard to the matters of wise administration. What a good and wholesome standard that is. And verse 14 finally says then, the king that faithfully judgeth the poor, his throne shall be established forever. So not only should we not discriminate between the rich or the poor, perhaps if anything we should show more concern for those who are in need. You see, I think what verse 14 is saying is that the test of a king in power, this is how one writer put it, and I thought this was good. He said, the test of a king in power is the extent to which he keeps faith with those who can put least pressure on him. That's a good principle, isn't it? Especially once he's risen to power. How well does he keep faith with, does he care for, does he worry about those who can actually put the least pressure on him? The poor, of no consequence. That's the measure of his faithfulness. And the measure of his wisdom as a wise ruler given to wise administration. The king that learns to do that, his throne shall be established forever, says the proverb. This spirit, this principle is eternally beneficial, is the lesson of the proverb. How needful, brothers and sisters, that we learn those lessons of wise administration in our ecclesias, in our families, in our marriages, that the kingdom of God, even in this present age and prospect, can be governed wisely and for the good of the truth. And in all these things, of course, in all these principles for kingship, we realize that all we're really doing is manifesting the spirit of our Heavenly Father, aren't we? It's Him. It's God in these principles that we seek to reveal in our lives. The Lord is King. Lift up thy voice, O earth, and all ye heavens rejoice from world to world. The joy shall ring. The Lord omnipotent is King. The Lord is King. Who then shall dare resist His will, distrust His care, or murmur at His wise decrees, or doubt His royal promises? The Lord is King, child of the dust. The judge of all the earth is just, holy, and true. All His ways, let every creature speak His praise. All wise, all perfect is the Lord. In every deed, in every word, let heaven and earth their tribute bring to praise and magnify their King.